You guys still there?
Yeah, we're waiting for the intro, man.
Yeah, it's not going to run, so just jump in.
All right, it's going to run, so...
Welcome to Manufacturing Talk Radio, your source for breaking news, business trends, and economic forecasts here and abroad that impact one-third of America's economy. And now your hosts, Lou Weiss and Tim Grady.
Welcome to this episode of Manufacturing Talk Radio. My name is Tim Grady. I'm here with my co-host, Lou Weiss. And Lou, we've got some news today. We're talking to Tim Fiore with the Institute for Supply Management on the ISM's Report on Business series. And the report just came out this morning. What did you think of it, Lou, before we have Tim explain it to us?
I'm not thinking really a whole lot about it. And I don't care if it's over 50 or not. It's getting closer and closer to the watermark. So...
And in
All Metals and Forge Group, we're feeling it just like most of the metal companies or fabricators or machinery builders. There seems to be concern about, futures, and we still have another month of summer. So let Tim take it away and tell me why I shouldn't be freaking out.
Okay, well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I love this report. The reason I love this report is because there's 10 data points with a whole bunch of comments and analysis underneath that that really tells a story. So let's talk about what the story says for July. We've had four straight months of PMI softening, meaning we're still expanding, but at relatively soft levels. 4 months ago, we were 52.8. This month we're at 51.2, and we've had no rebound at all, which is very unusual. Six of our 10 sub-indexes were actually in a contraction mode this month out of 10, and that's the first time we've seen that kind of heft since May of 2016, which is a little bit concerning too. The summary story on this is that demand is very weak and that we're probably overcapacitized. And let me explain to you why I think the demand is fairly weak. So at 50.8 new orders, up eight tenths of a point from a 50 number in June, that's a really weak expansion. You know, I use in the range, which is a plus or minus 12.5 points. Generally, our index travels in about a 25 total point range. So you can see that's not even a 10% change from the prior month. So very, very weak. On top of that, on the new export order side, we're now in contraction mode at 48.1. So our new export orders are less this month than they were last month, which is never a good thing. From the standpoint of customer inventories, we're now almost at a 46 level. If you go back, go back 4 months, we were at 42.6, which I'm much more comfortable with because it means that there's future demand for production output. Now at a 46 level, we're very close to the just about right number. And several of us who kind of look at this number think that you get north of 46 and it's enough. But the big story is that the backlog contracted for the third straight month, and it contracted stronger at a 43.1 point. 4 months ago, we were at 53.9. We were actually building backlog. And now we're contracting backlog. So what that really says is that the new order rates coming in are not strong enough to maintain production output to the point where production needed to reach into the backlog and burn some of that down. So demand has definitely gotten weak. We have more capacity than we need at the current demand levels. And, we've had four straight months of declining PMI without any kind of a rebound. So... it's concerning.
That's a mild word.
That's
a mild word. I think that obviously the summer has something to do with what's going on or not going on. And I see in the comments that some of your interviewees talk about is the tariff issue. And there doesn't seem to be a whole lot going on in regards to the tariffs. They have a meeting, they cancel it, they delay it 3 months. Matter of fact, I did hear something, a quote by someone in Washington, D.C., that's basically he said he doesn't really care. And that's a wild statement. And it's the economy, stupid. And we need to get the ball rolling again.
Yeah, okay. So let's,
Tim, what are your respondents saying to all this? I'm sorry, what are your respondents saying to all of this?
Yeah, all right. So first, on the seasonality side, our seasonality factors were slightly positive for new orders in production, and for supplier deliveries and employment, slightly negative. So the numbers you're seeing on supplier deliveries and employment, they're actually slightly higher, the raw numbers. And for the new orders and production, they're actually slightly lower than what you're seeing, but not serious, not a big, big shift. If they hadn't been seasonally adjusted, we would have been at about a 50.7. And for those who follow the report, they can extract those numbers out of the report and calculate that themselves. I think we had 25% of our respondents had tariff-related comments, 25%. And we had a 1.2-to-1 positive sentiment to not so positive, which was up slightly from 1.1-to-1 last month, which is down significantly from the 3-to-1 that we had in May and in April. So the feelings, the sentiment has been declining to the point where we're pretty much 1-for-1 at this point. I think, you know, if you look at the tariff issue, and my belief on this, you know, we have a strong currency. It's not helping exports at all. The interest rate drop that occurred yesterday isn't going to have a big impact on these numbers. A quarter point is not going to juice the manufacturing economy. The biggest headwind that we have, besides the fact that we've been running now for 35 months on what's generally a 37-month average cycle, is that tariff issues are continuing. And the positive thing is that from the last report that we did, the $300 billion of input China material, the last $300 billion, most likely won't see a 25% tariff. I think the respondents, at the time we did the report last month, 46% of the comments were tariff-related. And the biggest issue there was that pretty much all of China's imports to the U.S. are going to be tariffed at a 25%. The last $300 billion will not be tariffed. I don't think anybody thinks that's going to be tariffed in the short term, but you never know. I think we also kind of believe that the $250 billion that's currently being tariffed at 25% is not going to go away in the short term. It's going to be there for a long time. The Mexico border issue in our last report had already been resolved, so the comments I think had been we understood that at least for the time being, inbound material from Mexico was not going to be tariffed, but there's only 50 days or something left before that deadline terminates and the whole thing could come back. In the last couple of weeks, the threats of tariffs against Guatemala, not a big country that is going to impact manufacturing, were used to resolve a political immigration issue, which is alarming because now you're using economic strength and trade issues to resolve political and social issues, and I think we've generally just lost confidence. And then, you know, lastly, there, and you'll see it in my second paragraph of the front of the report, is that there's definitely strong indications that, okay, enough is enough. We're going to move product being manufactured in China out of China, whether it's company-owned factories or whether they're JVs or whether it's subcontract suppliers who are providing them. The community is now moving to find a new place to make this stuff, and the comments aren't jumping at you that it's coming back to the U.S. They're going other places.
What effect does the Belt and Road that China is building have an effect on their concern about their exports to the West? They are building their own marketplace in, I think, it's 68 nations, And, of course, we're left out of that. And they're kind of taking the attitude, well, fine, we don't care. We don't need to export to the United States. Is that something that you can comment on?
Well, I'm generally familiar with their strategy. It's been underway for many years. 5% of their GDP is exports to the U.S., so, you know, they can't ignore that. But their exports to the European Union are larger, simply because there's more population in the European Union. It's a 400 million population in the European Union, but as I recall, European Union as a bloc is the number one trading partner with China.
Right.
So, and I think this whole Belt and Road activity is a way to export Chinese labor in a large part to build infrastructure in developing countries that can then be used to trade and help transport materials in and out of the countries. And, you know, they're loaning money to those countries that in many cases are having a hard time paying it back. So, and some of that had to do with the whole TPP activity. So I don't think China can ignore this. I think the biggest issue, so let's jump over to the six big industry sectors. So, you know, computers, electronics, and chemicals are number one, number two, very close to each other, about 35% of manufacturing GDP. Transportation equipment follows at about 13%. Food and beverage about 12, petroleum and coal products at about 7 or 8, and then fabricated metal products at about 6. So those are our big six, and those are the ones you got to kind of watch. There's been a real shift in expansion and contraction in those categories, those industry sectors, over the last 6 months. Up until a couple of months ago, computer and electronics and chemical products were our number one, number two industry sectors expanding. And there are number one, number two industry sectors, so they have an outsized weight on everything else. But they were expanding. They were expanding pretty strongly. I mean, I remember numbers, high 50s, low 60s. We don't report those numbers for those industry sectors, but I can see them. And they were expanding in that kind of territory. Now they're in the low 50s. So and they have an outside impact on the PMI, and there is part of the reason. Food and beverage is our strongest expanding industry sector, and it's expanding pretty strongly. On the contraction side, we have two contracting. We have fabricated metal products, and we have transportation equipment, and they're both contracting fairly strongly. But I think the real story here, you can get the fabricated metal products under the whole steel issue, although a positive thing is that steel prices are growing again. And they're about 8% off of what is the nominal amount. They're almost $600 a short ton, which is pretty good. I mean, that means there's some increased demand for them. I think that's a really good thing. And with the lead times of steel, 8 to 12 weeks, that could bode good, well, for our September-October manufacturing period. You know, I think that the real story here is around computers and chemicals. Chemicals is a building block industry sector that feeds into all the others. It's also a global supply chain business, so they export product everywhere. If you have export issues, new export orders are down, most likely the chemical industry is going to feel that. So to have that industry sector just slightly expanding is concerning long term. And then on the computer electronics side, they were able to crush their way through increased material tariffs for the last year, passives, actives, chips coming out of China, memory, all being tariffed at anywhere from 5 to 25%. Industry sector still grew, still expanded. And now with this whole Huawei trade issue, Department of Commerce, export license stuff, computer electronics has now kind of come down to the ground. And you look at the detail of all that, there's a lot of product that was being manufactured in the U.S. for export into China, and it's now being restricted. You got to ask yourself, is that part of what's happening here with the computer electronics industry sector? So I think the real story here, computer electronics, chemicals, neither one of them are looking positive for the short term.
Tim, do you feel, regarding XM Bank, that it's now been authorized for the next 10 years. Do you think that's going to have a positive impact on our export markets?
Yeah, I think it's always been a good, but not if you can't ship 737 MAXs, it's not going to matter much in the short term, right?
Right, right.
I mean, I think that is definitely weighing on the transportation equipment area. We know automotive is flat to slightly down, not a real lot, but it's not growing compared to last year. Heavy-duty truck business is the output is strong, but the new order inputs are weak, and that's probably weighing into the new order number. And we know on the aircraft side, order book is down because of the uncertainties around the MAX, and we know that sales are down because the MAX isn't shipping. And there's many tiers of suppliers that are impacted by that. And, you know, between those two, I think trucks and airplanes, that's what's driving the transportation sector, the number three sector, into contraction.
I've heard a bit of a rumor about the 737 that they may wind up dropping that aircraft altogether, being that they can't figure out what the problem is.
Well, I hope that's not true. That's the best-selling aircraft ever. Now,
that's right.
You check into it, and maybe the original 737-100 and 200 that I flew on early in my career don't look like the 737 MAX. But maybe they should have done more than just a dash number change on it. But it's still a great aircraft.
Yeah, as long as it stays up in the air.
Yeah, I'm the great people at Boeing. They'll figure it out.
Right.
So Tim, in terms of supply chain, as people move out of China, is Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam, Indonesia, all of that Southeast Asia area looking really attractive?
Well, it depends on what you're moving, right? I mean, there's been a lot of transshipping going on too. I think there's been data that shows that as China exports to the U.S. dropped, Vietnam exports to the U.S. increased. And, we've probably all seen the story about galvanized steel. They put up galvanized lines in Vietnam. The steel gets shipped to Vietnam, they run it through a hot dip process and then export it to the U.S. It's really Vietnamese steel, not Chinese steel, but it's really Chinese steel galvanized in Vietnam.
right.
China exports to the U.S. fell, I found this number last week. China exports to the U.S. fell 8% in June, year over year. That's pretty incredible. China imports fell 7.3% in June. So U.S. imports fell 31%. There it is, 31% year over year, U.S. imports from China fell. That's a serious number. So, 31% on $600 billion a year, right, of imports we're taking from China. So you're talking $200 billion of economic loss in the Chinese economy that runs at, about $12 trillion. So that's what, about 1.5%?
Yeah, you're talking about real money.
Yeah, it's real. It's serious money. Serious money. That's probably why you can buy a TEU container China outbound to the U.S. pretty cheap these days.
This is true.
Yeah, I'll bet that's true. So you were talking about headwinds, Tim. Just for our listeners, if you would summarize what headwinds you see from now maybe through the end of the year, so they can kind of get a feel for what they should be looking at.
Right. So, all indications are, as I said, all indications are that things are pretty weak. I mean, prices at 45.1, price declines. Now, maybe the steel growth here in the last couple of weeks will turn that number around. But, a lot of that 45.1 was, probably early to mid-July price strength where steel was still running at the low 500s. Fuel costs are still low. And, copper is really weak. So it's just another a foundation that says that demand is kind of weak and people are trying to buy share. So, I think the single biggest issue here, but I don't see it happening in the short term, is somehow we got to resolve the trade issue and or the threat of continual trade actions. Because I think if you look at our lead times for capital equipment, they dropped 3 days, not a real lot. 7 days on a production material, which is quite a bit. That's the biggest drop that we've seen in many, many years. So I think there's a lack of business confidence in what to do, where to invest your money. I don't think anybody is saying that the economy is tanking. And, you know, we're even at a 50 or a 51, we're still stable at much higher levels than we were running 2 years ago, right? So it's not like we're in contraction mode. I think there will be some confidence here with the interest rate reduction, but I think that's going to help earnings per share, and it might help the financers, but I don't think that's going to really add to manufacturing GDP. The consumer confidence numbers are strong, which is a bright spot, and but the consumers are the last to know that there's an issue, right? So,
right.
So I'm kind of hoping that that we get some amount of a rebound here, but you know the rebound has got to come from a step up in new orders, and it could be that we could see it in August. As you guys know, September and October and half of November are usually pretty good manufacturing months. And
for sure.
So you know people are laying orders in August for deliveries in that time frame. So hopefully we'll see a step up in the new order area. It would be good if the new export orders helped contribute to that and went back into an expansion mode rather than being in a contraction mode. And you know, as we close the month of August, it would really be good if that backlog got back up above 50, even if the new order level was at 52 or something. So I'm looking for some signs of life here, and at present, the only sign of life in this report is a supplier delivery number growing 2.6 points, which doesn't make a lot of sense compared to everything else that you see here. Right?
Well, I'm hoping that the September-October manufacturing surge starts a month early, which is not likely. We do hear a lot from our metal buyer around the country that they're hearing from their customers, well, we can't place the order yet. Our customers put a hold on it. They're not sure what's going on or what's going to happen. So that we hear directly a lot of concern about what's happening and when will it happen and how will it affect them in the near term. So it is an issue. We hear it specifically every day. And no matter how hard you push to get the PO number, if they don't want to place that number, they're not placing that number.
Yeah. Yep, that's exactly right. Yep, you can't squeeze it out of them.
No, no. And no matter what kind of deals you come up with, if they don't have the confidence, it doesn't work.
Yep, you know, even if you discount it 15%, they're probably not going to jump because you're not in a consumer-driven retail business.
That's correct. That's correct.
Plus, you don't want to destroy your own market, right?
No, we have enough people out there doing it for us.
Oh boy.
So,
Tim, I just.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to wrap, but go ahead. I got more time.
Okay, I just wanted to remind our listeners that this report is, as always, available at instituteforsupplymanagement.org under their news and research section. And in a couple of days, a non-manufacturing report is due out. So, if you want to get the written report behind this, you can either come to nfgtalkradio.com, listen to this episode and link to the report, or go to instituteforsupplymanagement.org and get a copy of the report, which Tim is about to summarize for us.
Yeah. So you know, overall here, demand is weak. Demand is driving a decline in the PMI expansion. We're currently likely sitting in an overcapacity situation, environment, where we could do a lot more with a little bit more demand. The overall concern here is not only on the weak new orders and the weak new export orders, but the fact that backlog is being consumed at a faster rate, to some extent alarming. We have 6 of our 10 sub-indexes in contraction mode. And the last time we saw something like that was back in May of 2016, where we had 8 of 10. Consumer confidence is good, positive. The money policy is better. The trade issues are better this month than they were last month, but they're still not very good. And after a year and a half of using trade as a multi-purpose weapon, I think the community is getting a little bit exhausted, and we're not really sure where to invest, as evidenced by the fact that our durable goods lead times are dropping, which means that we're not placing as many orders as we have in the past, even though I think June was a fairly good durable goods month. Initial jobless claims are still low. There's no comments really about layoffs, but on the employment side in our report, there were several comments about not replacing people because of the eagle eye on what's going on with demand. And I think, finally, the raw material inventory accounts are being watched very closely with respect to new order inputs and the situation with backlog, because no one wants to end up holding on to raw material inventory that they can't convert into sales. So that's kind of the story for the month of July. Our big trading partners, China, PMI at 49.7, contracting. The EU manufacturing PMI at 46.4, six straight months of contraction. When I first came into this role, we were talking about synchronous expansion across the global economy. China expanding, Japan expanding, Europe expanding. The only area that really wasn't expanding much was Brazil. And now we're sitting here with the U.S. Probably running at anywhere from a 1.8 to 2.1 GDP level at this point. That would be my prediction. And everybody else in kind of a hunker down mode. And Europe at probably 1.5 or less. And China at the slowest rates of growth in decades.
Well, that's a cheery, cheery report. we'll let you make up for it next month when everything comes back to normal.
Yeah, it's got to be the new orders. People got to start place orders. Place your orders.
All right, we have to hear from Anthony Nieves in a couple of days, and he'll cheer us up.
Yeah, he should. Well, we'll see what he's got. I'm not going to say. I'm not saying anything.
Okay. You already did.
Well, I don't have insight into his numbers, but I know his numbers are generally stronger, and they're not as cyclic.
Got it. Okay. So yeah, we now clearly got the inside poop.
Well,
all right,
Tim,
gentlemen.
Thanks for joining us again on Manufacturing Talk Radio. I know you've got to rush off to your next interview, so we appreciate the ISM doing this series with us. Thank you.
How you bet, guys. Good to talk with you, and I'll be speaking with you at the in early September. Thanks.
Very good. Very good. We'll
Take
talk
care.
To you.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
So, Lou, I have to guess that the quarter-point drop in GDP in the Fed rate with the excess capacity in manufacturing is going to produce bupkis.
Bupkis is probably the right word, and too bad I am only on the third floor of our office building. So if I decide to jump, I'm only going to become a paraplegic. So these are hard words to absorb, and it only means that we got to work harder and try and find where the business is, because there's always enough business out there. You just got to dig deeper and beg harder.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So with all that, we want to thank everyone for listening to this episode of Manufacturing Talk Radio. Lou and I are going to go to the bar.
I think so. We're going to do that. I'm going to have a Moscow Mule. That's my new drink.
Yeah, okay. And drowned our sorrows. But for the rest of you, thanks again for listening to this episode of Manufacturing Talk Radio. You can listen to all of our episodes at mfgtalkradio.com. There's lots of links to other shows that we do there, so come often and listen much. Thank you again for listening to this episode of Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Thanks for joining us on Manufacturing Talk Radio. You can hear our next broadcast each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at mfgtalkradio.com.